Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're talking Plague Attack for the Atari Video Computer System. It takes place in a human mouth. You're like a militant tube of toothpaste in a gigantic hell mouth full of molars. The incoming enemies, which are like, you know, candy canes and hamburgers, hot dogs, ice cream cones, etc.
I think if you get 35,000 points, you can send away to Activision and join the Plaque Defender squad or something. They'll send you
an actual patch you can sew on your clothes, don't they?
What kids like came to school with like their like Activision patches on that didn't just get immediately just like bullied within an inch of their lives? Like,
I'm a member of the Plaque Defender Squadron.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinata, Booker Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
You must be with Tim.
And today we are talking about Neverwinter Nights. It was developed by BioWare, published by Atari Infogrames with the Atari name. Developed, it first came out on the PC in June 2002 in US. And with me today I have...
Me, Kazuma Hashimoto. I am a translator and reviewer for RPG Site, Rely on Horror, and Nova Crystallis.
Well, we have a new guest today. Is there anything else you'd like to say about yourself before we introduce our two regulars?
You can find me at JusticeKazi_ on Twitter. I discuss a lot of, translations, mostly cover the Yakuza series, and just general social issues and politics within, Japanese, LGBT plus scenes. So I guess if you're looking for video game conversation, that, I guess you'll find that there, too.
Awesome. I love RPG Site. You guys should all check it out. It's one of my favorite places for RPGs, and we couldn't find a better person to talk about RPGs today. But I found two other great people to talk about RPGs.
I'm Texelbam.
And I'm not important. I'm word on the wind.
All right, so, hardcore gaming politics aside, Neverwinter Nights, best third edition game or best third edition game? Let's discuss.
Disagree.
Best third edition game. Oh, what?
Yep.
I'd rather play Icewind Dale 2.
Yep, oh, that's a good choice, actually. Yeah, Icewind Dale 2 is very good.
Wow, we're already off to a great start. All right, so...
so don't make the case that Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is a third edition game, because it's not a Dungeons & Dragons game, but it does use a D20 variant.
Before we get onto that railroad, so who wants to... you know what? Let's have our esteemed guest tell us, everybody, what is Neverwinter Nights?
So Neverwinter Nights is BioWare's first, Black Isle / BioWare's first Forgotten Realms game licensed by Wizards of the Coast. And it came out in 2002. It was a PC game, and it kind of changed the way people saw third-person 3D role-playing games. It was an extremely influential role-playing game, again, set within the Forgotten Realms universe of Faerun, which shares the same universe and continuity as the Icewind Dale and Baldur's Gate games. It has all of the rule sets from 3.0, or is it 3.0 or 3.5? 3.0, right?
It's 0.0, very specifically.
It's 0.0?
The,
okay.
The ability score boosting spells have a range of 2 to 5, as opposed to being a flat 4.
Okay. So yeah, then it's 3.0. It uses a 3.0 tool set.
Yeah, it's a bit too late. It's 3.5 is a bit too late for this game. I think when they start development, that must have been just after 3.0 was published, possibly even a little bit earlier with like playtesting material, depending on how long they needed to develop this.
So what I was getting, because I think the expansions add some 3.5 stuff, like some of the prestige classes and some of the skills I thought were 3.5 with the expansions, which for our listeners, while you were talking about Neverwinter Nights, we're probably just going to talk about the whole complete, all the expansion stuff, because it's a lot easier to keep track of who's played what.
Yeah, and most people who get the game today will probably get the Diamond Edition, which has everything anyway.
Yeah.
And just for clarification, even though I think very few people might confuse this is not the 1991 a DOS game published by Strategic Simulations of the same name.
That only ran on AOL, right?
Yeah.
Yes, America Online.
You bought by the minute.
Yeah, but thankfully back then you could buy like a croissant and it would come with a free like AOL disc that would give you like 6 hours of internet.
Well,
so
did you pay for the AOL to play this game, or did you actually pay for the? We're not talking about
No, what you did was you paid for the Chex Quest.
Ah, I see. So yeah, this game is. Even as I like this game, it's a lot to talk about how the systems and the mechanics of this game are pretty great. But you'll never get anybody praising the story.
No.
Because of the D&D games, it's probably the weakest story, even counting
this
the Gold Fox games.
This is pretty much the hard opposite of Planescape Torment.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of one of my big problems with a lot of the criticisms against the game. They're like, well, the story is kind of weak. I'm like, yeah, it's just a big dungeon-crawling romp, and it's great, and every D&D game doesn't have to be a big, epic, long story.
That's kind of, like, my position on it. Like, the base campaign is, like, borderline unplayable as far as I'm concerned, because they try and do too much plot, and then, like, the second expansion with the Underdark is just like, all right, Here's a vehicle for you to all dungeon crawl, go dungeon crawl. And it's like, great, we got straight to the point.
Yeah, the problem is also that the story is not paced very well. You can very easily spend 45 minutes of dense text at the start and then just 4 hours of absolutely nothing, depending on how you play the game, because it's somewhat openish in the beginning. So by that time, you may or may not have forgotten what you are exactly doing again.
Oh boy, like
I will say this, it shows me how unmemorable the second expansion was, because the second expansion is actually Shadows of Undrentide, which takes place in the revival of the Netherese Empire, and the third expansion is in the Underdark, with the literal dungeon crawling.
The Diamond thing only had two things other than the core game to play.
Shadows of Undrentide was separate from Underdark, but I think they just packaged Undrentide and Underdark as like the same thing, basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, whatever the thing that wasn't the first extra mission set.
Yeah.
The one where you start at level 15. That's
yes,
the fun
that one. That's the good one.
That's Hordes of the Underdark. Shadows of Undertale start at level 1, and you start as that character, which has like your basic like RPG beginning, small town, you're the apprentice of so-and-so, who's also affiliated with the Harper, so you're automatically a good character or whatever. And then after that, Hordes of the Underdark starts with the same character, and the Water Davian hero was never heard from again after the first game. They were just like, okay, that character existed, now we're moving on to another character that has a better background, because they got a little bit better at writing the story, at least. So
yes. Yeah, this was not when BioWare was known for their excellent yarns and stories.
But this is where it started, because with Neverwinter Nights and Baldur's Gate, you can really see the threads of like how they lined out Dragon Age, or I guess like samples from games that they had already created, and just made like other stories from that like skeleton, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of over here biting my tongue so hard as someone who can't stand BioWare.
Well, I hate calling them the greatest storytellers in video games, too, but everyone likes to. The other thing is, my favorite part about this game is essentially it's the same plot as
I'm just going to point out, I had the observation that when I booted up the core campaign, I'm like, this is another BioWare game where you start out in an institute of learning.
Well, it's an excellent way to frame a tutorial.
You say that, and yet there was nothing to stop me, a wizard, from walking into the thieves tutorial after things had gone to hell, trying to open a door that I didn't know was a thing, and getting killed by it because I had 5 health.
Well, to be fair, these games came out at a very different time. Like, when I was a kid, when I was 8, playing this for the first time, games were really different and structured differently that required you to do a lot of reading and have a lot of observational skills. Now, I will say that with the way that games are made now, where everything is very much like on your screen with a very interactive HUD to tell you what to do and where to go, replaying Neverwinter Nights has never been more difficult for me because I'm not used to doing so much reading or actually having to use my eyes.
Like, I'm over 30 over here. I've been around the ringer plenty of times, and going through this was just, you want me to listen to all these people with the very bad voicing to actually get the instruction on how to play. You know what? I know how 3X works, so I'm just going to roll.
I kind of liked this when I played it for the first time because I still had all those DOS RPGs in mind that always gave you like 47 different skills at the start. Mm-hmm. But and you could pick them freely, but if you didn't pick at least these three, the game was either really difficult or pretty much impossible. This game doesn't quite do that. You can still create a character that's not that great, but it's generally playable.
Honestly, I just thought the voice acting was neat because I grew up with not even having speakers on my PC for a long while, so hearing my game talk every line in the game was cool. I didn't care about the quality of the voice acting, for sure. So, the game itself, we should probably hit on a little bit, is your fairly standard top-down RPG, especially at this time, because we'd had about 6 different Infinity Engine games at this point. No, 5 Infinity Engine games? Is that all there were?
The BGs, the Icewinds, and Planescape.
Huh, I felt like there was... another
what if expansion packs and stuff. So.
Fallout
isn't Infinity Engine, is it?
I think the first one was.
No, it's the same engine as the second one.
Okay.
Huh. We had
there isn't a Buck Rogers game in Infinity Engine like there is in Goldbox? Or?
No, I think that's because Lorraine Williams had the license for that and she was no longer involved when the Infinity Engine
We should was make created. A Kickstarter today and have a Buck Rogers Infinity Engine game. So, okay, there are 5 Infinity Engine games at this point, plus 2 Fallouts, plus all the other Me Toos at this point, because this was, what did I say, 2002?
Yep.
So we're now in this place where we are talking about a standard top-down RPG. Most of the game is predicated with your mouse. A lot of buttons, a lot of clicking. We're pretty much at the place in RPGs now where control schemes are really as good as they're ever going to get.
They did have a control scheme where the camera will actually like follow behind your character, and you have tank controls, and you can navigate that way. And boy, howdy, that was a relief for my sanity.
Holy smokes, you played with those?
That's the best way to play.
I tried it for about 15 seconds, and then just went back and never ever turned those on again.
See, I'm used to playing MMOs. I'm used to moving by just holding W.
Yeah, I was too, but I hated that control scheme. I didn't think that anybody had actually ever played the game using that thing. Holy smokes, because it works in KOTOR. You know, that's the best way to probably play KOTOR, but... okay. All right, so the game also has a third-person behind-the-back camera in which you can use WAS to turn around and move.
Strafing buttons with a silly strafe animation.
Yeah, I know the sequel plays a lot more with... like, the controls for that are a lot better in that mode. Usually everybody has this point where they take on stories. Kazuma, if I'm saying that right.
Kazuma,
okay.
Yeah.
I know
like Kazuma Kiryu, and not like Jin Kazama.
Well, see, it just now occurred to me that you say those differently.
No problem.
What's your favorite class in the game?
Please.
So for the base game, I usually just play a ranger with the point blank shot build. And for the other ones, I usually go sorcerer's dragon disciple. But I did that when I was a kid because I thought having dragon wings and a dragon tail was really cool.
Okay, so if I can on that really quick, and nobody ever tell Bob this. When I was a kid, that was always how I did it too, because for that exact same reason.
I mean, it was awesome, and you had like fire breath, and it was really cool. And I like seeing my character like change and like grow wings when I would like level. I was like, wow, this is awesome. So I thought it was like a really like neat thing. And then when I realized that I was really bad at playing mages in Neverwinter Nights, I just re-rolled the character and made an arcane archer.
In fairness, that's not your fault. It's just kind of bad to be a mage in Neverwinter Nights.
Yeah, what we should probably mention is that you do not have a party in this game, unlike in most of the, if not all of the Infinity Engine and Goldbox games. Instead, you play as your character. You can have a companion, but you only like semi-control that one, and it's only going to be that one. So you will not have a situation where you have your mage standing behind, let's say, a paladin and a fighter being neatly protected. Instead, your wizard is just kind of there, probably taking most of the flak.
Although, as somebody who beat this game as a wizard all the time, a wizard or a sorcerer, I think the game handles that okay. It's you got to play
it a lot. It's not playable.
I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying it's unreasonable.
Well, that's not quite that different. But the game doesn't feel. I never really feel like the I preferred this game a lot of ways when I was younger to the Infinity Engine games for those reasons. Because I would get a lot of overwhelmed a lot of times. I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do with six guys? I have two guys I know who can smack things, one guy who can heal, and that's all I really need, game. And I just wander around with only three people in Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, my favorite combination was having a fighter as my actual character, or a cleric, and then also having the NPC cleric as support. Because healing is what the AI does fairly well as support, and somewhat reliably, and I found that worked pretty well. It's not the most interesting combination, because a fighter, for the most part, you just pick a good weapon, good armor, and
cleave,
just smack everything. Yeah. And once the fighter gets a feat, I think, every second level, so there's a good chance that at one point you might even run out of stuff you really want to acquire feat-wise. The feats are essentially skill points. So that works pretty well. It's not the most interesting combination, but it's pretty straightforward, and it gets you results.
Yeah, so maybe that's worth bringing up in this game, is talking about this really kind of talks about like building a D&D character and playing D&D, and quite frankly, this game might actually finally nail, well, I shouldn't say that because it's not the great on the adventure side, but you actually really are just quite playing D&D in Neverwinter Nights.
Complete with horrendous class imbalance.
Yeah, like the rule set is actually ported over, well, for all of the awful, awful ideas that has.
Also, the custom portraits look hideous.
Yeah, like...
Sorry, the default ones, not the custom ones. Customs look however hideous you would like to design them.
Like, so the first time I ever played this was straight up a couple days ago. I'd never played. I have no nostalgia for this game, and I was greeted to a main menu with like a horrendous dirge and a portal to Hell Dimension, courtesy of Windows Media Player visualizations in the background, and really ugly character portraits. This was an immense.
So fun fact, that background, the portal to Hell thing. That's because of higher resolutions. That wasn't in, like, when I played the game originally on a CRT monitor that was about, like, 12 inches by 12 inches. You didn't have that. It was kind of a weird thing that came in when I played the game much later, and I was like, oh, that's
weird. So it's
weird.
A placeholder.
Well, I don't know if it's it's probably a placeholder, like, if you played it in 2002 with a really good monitor somehow. I don't know how far those discs will let you put up the resolution, but, yeah. So, yeah, no, this game is ugly as sin, even when you... That's the real thing. I'm impressed that you did the third-person camera, because those character models are awful.
Oh, see, that wasn't a problem, because my character didn't have a body.
Did you get a glitch or something?
My character was a head, two hands, and feet. I was playing Wizard Rayman Woman.
Huh. Yeah, you must
every single time, like, all the rest of the NPCs rendered, like, their outfits just fine. Me, no.
Weird.
Well, it's BioWare, so you don't know whether that's a bug or a feature.
If I removed my clothes, I could have a body model. I wasn't going to play the game nude.
I suppose. Although one thing I did kind of like about this game was the character portraits sort of lined up with the major models. Like, Arabeth looks like her portrait. I always remember.
She looks just as dumb as rocks as she is, yes.
She's made of, like, three cardboard boxes, so...
She's a chaotic good paladin. What do you expect? Paladins aren't smart. They're just an...
I know, I was going to say, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. You know, intelligence is the one stat that a paladin doesn't need, and she reflects that so perfectly, I didn't want to listen to a damn thing she said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that I did like about the characters, a lot of them are just kind of flat, and they're just there, they give you one quest, and then they disappear. But at least you're companions, so you have a couple of companions you can pick from. They don't level up, but you meet them at various points through the game, and whenever you meet them again, they will have a higher level. They do have personalities. They're not particularly deep, but you have the cleric, who I think suffers from insecurities. Yeah. You have a barbarian. You've got a couple of other guys, so they put some effort into them. They're not as good as some of the Baldur's Gate characters, but they're also not completely flat. It's not like they just join you and then you never hear from them ever again, and they're just there to heal you or carry more stuff.
So yeah. On the subject of companions, Clade, you were impressed about this last night when I was talking about it.
Yeah. You played the game in multiplayer.
Yeah, so I actually had a friend who has played this game and, like, played it when, like, it was new and legitimately likes it, but, you know, is also not going to cut it any slack on any of its failings, which was kind of necessary for me to play it, because I was low on patience at the very start of the game. And so following him through the game, you know, and knowing how 3.5 works and being repulsed by the voice acting, I basically, like, skipped a bunch of the tutorial stuff. So I didn't know about getting companions. Apparently, there's supposed to be a wand of magic missiles that you can get as a wizard that it can help you for the other parts of the game.
Yeah, by the way, I was wrong on that. I was thinking wand of that Ray of Frost wand you'd mentioned.
I didn't have a Ray of Frost wand. It gave me a wand of fireballs with 3 shots.
Oh, you mentioned later on you found a chest with a wand of Ray of Frost.
No,
that's the wand I was thinking. Yeah, you did. No, somebody mentioned
it. I never got that. I never even saw one of those.
Huh, somebody mentioned it. Anyway, I was thinking of Wand of Ray of Frost in the game, not Wand of Magic Missiles.
Either way, you know, it's like, my friend was playing a fighter, I was playing a wizard, and if my friend hadn't been playing a fighter, the game would have been like a 20-minute quit for me. Because my friend was just like, okay, I'm just going to go in, get the attention of everything, butcher everything all over the place, and I would just be like, okay, I have a crossbow. Fire. Wait. Wait. Die. That was my experience, because it's like, when you're a low-level wizard, you have only so many spells, and they only do so much, and a lot of the encounters were just like, hey, they have more actual health than you can do damage with these spells at this level. Woo.
Yeah, I feel like playing a wizard or a sorcerer requires, like, a lot of outside knowledge of, like, what the spells do. And you get, like, cantrips, which, like, don't really do much of anything for you at the early levels.
That's a hilarious thing. I got more mileage out of recasting Ray of Frost than any of the first level spells.
Mm, yeah. Because that's, like, basically, like, how you played, like, is how I played my boyfriend. My boyfriend has no experience with these games. He wanted to play a sorcerer, so I played a fighter. And I basically went through and killed everything for him until, like, he basically got the experience by proxy to finally be of use to the party. And, like, when I had soloed the game, like, as a sorcerer, when I had played for the first time, like, I was a kid, I just remember it being so unreasonably difficult. And I think it was only me being stubborn that got me through that game. Like, it was like, I just want to beat the game, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly how it would have had to have been for me, and I did not have the patience to do that with this game. Like, I actually play wizards when I actually play D&D, and I've played wizards in, like, all of the iterations of the Infinity Engine, and I play wizards in, you know, things that are based on these kind of things but aren't, you know, directly related to them, like Pillars of Eternity or Tyranny. It's like, I'm all about the wizard, and coming into this and finding, you know, it's like, oh, hey, my classic selection of, you know, having sleep is completely worthless because I'm going to hit my friend with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, these are all a bunch of undead. They don't give a damn about sleep. Or, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, gee, what am I supposed to do here? And then, with, like, we're just roaming around dealing with, you know, diseased, crazy people. He's carving them down in, like, whenever he rolls a 1 on his damage dice. We go into a building, and there's just, like, some half-orc who kills my friend in, like, 3 hits and me in 1. And we're like, what the hell just happened?
You were in the prison. I know exactly where you were when that happened.
We never went there.
Wait, so then did you guys go into, like, a house? Like, a random house before the prison?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay, That's usually a make or break point for a lot of people. just because, like, that encounter is just so unfair, even if you're playing, like, a fighter. I remember having to save scum a lot in that game. Neverwinter Nights is basically, like, a Baldur's Gate game where you save after every encounter, and then you do the encounter. If you fail, you just load, or if it didn't go the way you wanted to, you just reload it. So that's kind of the edge of it.
Yeah, see, we didn't want to reload much because that would kick my friend out of the game because I was hosting, and since GameSpy doesn't exist anymore, we had to go through the really clunky thing, which admittedly, to its credit, still works on a direct IP connection, but it has to try and do the GameSpy connection first and time out before it goes, okay, this ain't working. You might not have all features available, but you can still direct connect, and thankfully that actually works if you know how to port forward and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, this game is so not
we
did, designed
we loaded like once, and that was at that point, and then we were like, nope, never again. We're just going to accept respawns at this point, because that took us 5 minutes to set it all back up again. But yeah, like the encounter balance and difficulty is all over the place. Like, that was not the only time that we ran into a character where it was just like, oh, hey, here's this thing that's just like this impossible roadblock. We went through, after that stint, we went through Undeadville, where, you know, my friend again continued to just carve through all the zombies every day. Then we get to some underground warehouse, and then suddenly there's a lich who has all of the DR against my friend's sword. And my friend can't hurt this damn thing, but the thing can't hurt him either unless it crits. So it's like, okay, this is my time to shine. I'm ready for this. Magic missile. Spell resistance. I have spell penetration and evocation focus. Why did that fail? Fine. Run away to the other side of the warehouse. Sit for 10 seconds. Reload spells. Come back. And we got past that encounter by brute forcing it by abusing the engine. We go further in. There's a zombie lord at a point. All right, this guy also has a bunch of DR, and it's like got like bark skin or something. I don't remember. No, I didn't have that. But had a bunch of DR. My friend couldn't carve through it. All right, I've got combust now. This thing doesn't provide a save for some reason, and it's fire. Zombies hate fire. This'll be great. Combust. Spell absorb. What?
Ah, yes, the obscure rules of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, when we poked around in the Underdark campaign, I actually saw the spell that lets you do that. That requires being a 9th level wizard.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is this encounter balance? This is worse than that jackass outside the Friendly Arm Inn that with the level 5 magic missile.
Yeah, to us, this game doesn't really have encounter balance. I mean, generally, it still gets more difficult.
But the problem is, isn't it? It doesn't have encounter balance.
The problem is that some of the monsters are too accurately adapted. Like the intellect devourer. So they do take some liberties because there's a couple of effects that you can't really replicate well. But for the most part, they stick to armor class and hit points or hit dice and everything. So they said, oh, we want this monster here. Okay. This is how weak this monster is going to be. That's where we are. And I think other RPGs don't really have that problem because they just level scale everything, or you've got like stronger or weaker palette swap versions. But in Dungeons and Dragons, I mean, you can do that in the games, obviously, it's still just an adaptation. But you don't necessarily have that if you have this specific monster, unless you add class levels or you have just one that you upscale, it's like an advanced ogre instead of an ogre, then the ogre is going to be so strong. And if someone wants an ogre in there, then that's going to how strong the ogre is going to be. And for the most part, you can adjust that with NPCs or the humanoid characters because they can have character levels and stuff. But you find plenty of monsters where that isn't really the case. And I think I'm pretty sure they did playtest this, but they probably did it with a lot of knowledge of the game as well as the rules and everything behind. And maybe also with where the treasure is and everything. So I'm not sure. I mean, they couldn't have playtested this for all the combinations and everything.
I'm going to stop y'all right there, because I want to mention something. Tack said someone could mess with the monsters in this game, and that brings up probably the most important thing Neverwinter Nights did, the tool editing.
Oh, yeah, making your own campaign settings and uploading them online.
Yep.
That's probably why people still think about this game in a lot of regards, because while you can talk about how trash the main campaign is, and I still argue that in a lot of ways, what really makes this game shine is you can actually probably replicate the entire original campaign or box campaign in the game and make any tweaks you want. That's how powerful the editor is, or maybe how weak the game is, depending on how you view it. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure they did use the editor to actually do that.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, that the conclusion I came to about this game, because we've run for 30 minutes here and we should be getting to the ranking soon, is that this is a poorly designed game that is saved by the fact that it actually has, you know, these development tools in it, and thus allows, you know, a lot of freedom of ideas and expression. So basically, this game was successful by virtue of the Bethesda principle.
No, not exactly, because when this game came out, it was critically acclaimed for its story and its gameplay because of the departure from the Unity engine.
For its story?
No, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, when I was,
I'm
like,
not doubting you. I'm doubting the past.
Exactly. I'm, like, I'm not criticizing you here. I'm pointing fingers at whatever critic.
Well, you have to look at, like, what narratives were coming out around the same time on the PC and what the, like, the metric was. Like, it was basically judging BioWare against itself, against, like, its Icewind Dale series, its Baldur's Gate series, and, like, they had become, again, like, critical darlings through, like, I guess, having been Black Isle before. So it would already be very difficult for, I guess, people to be critical of them for this reason. And again, because it had, like, this big departure where, oh, it's 3D now. You have different companions. You have these expansions. You have more to do. It's a new tool set. Because the online community at the time, at least from what I remember when I was really young and playing this, the multiplayer was really immersive and really cool, but it was really difficult to get into because they were basically miniature private servers where people would be role-playing out their own scenarios and campaigns, which is really cool, and it's really awesome they had that. But I do remember the base game receiving a lot of praise and basically cementing, like, BioWare in this position where they were able to make other games like Jade Empire and whatnot.
Oh yeah, no, that is something I always forget that part exists. Not only does this game have editor tools, you can actually run this game in DM mode. Like, you build up the whole floor, and then you can sit behind the AI and make it act how you want to instead of just letting somebody run through your creation, which is what a lot of people did, in my understanding.
There were so many dedicated roleplay servers, it was nuts.
I didn't really have, like, consistent internet at this point. We had two computers, my dad's computer and mine that wasn't connected to the internet. So we just had a burnt disk of this game that I played off of and he played off his originals.
Yeah, Clay didn't stockpile AOL disks during the 90s.
I was too young for Don't Copy That Floppy, so I was completely morally justified. Let's see. Well,
that may have been the critical acclaim of the time, but if we're, you know, looking even a couple years back at it, it's pretty easy to see, like, the failings of the engine and the writing and the performances of the course.
And I mean, that's fair, but you can't deny it's contributed.
I mean,
I'm going to say that it is unjust, but I won't deny it.
I enjoyed this game's story well enough. It's not some great big epic exploration of themes and ideas, but, like, the main campaign, and I was trying to get at this when we were talking about it the other day, the game, it has some weird signposting, but it does tell you, go to this place, go to this place. Why it keeps it open, Christ knows, but the game tried to get through a lot of its failings, I think. Like, it didn't immediately, like Tack said, they maybe playtested. I'm sure they playtested, because
with copious amounts of alcohol.
I beat this game fairly young, and I can still beat this game without a lot of save scumming. Although, I'll grant you, I play with Wizard because I know 3rd edition like the back of my hand, so...
Oh, that was my 1st edition. I know it real well.
I think the game earned its own accolades back in 2002. I think it still holds up in a lot of regards. Because, if for nothing else, no other D&D RPG has let you get to fight a gold and silver dragon at the same time. And that's the best idea anybody has ever had, ever. So, but yes, word is mentioned. So, Tex, did you have anything else you wanted to add? You were kind of quiet this one.
No, I think the only thing I want to say is that the DM tools are pretty important, and that's highlighted by a relatively recent Forgotten Realms game that named Sword Coast Legends. Because that game has similar tools, but they're a lot weaker. And at the same time, it doesn't have the story that people liked about Baldur's Gate. And that shows that it kind of hit a spot between Neverwinter Nights, with the somewhat weak story, but the powerful tools, and Baldur's Gate with the strong story and no tools available except for traditional modding. And that shows that just how important those tools were. Because without those, I don't think this game would be what it is today. And that same goes for the sequel as well, which the sequel especially, Neverwinter Nights 2, has a lot of good custom-made campaigns. And while that's a sequel and not this game we're talking about right now, Neverwinter Night did contribute to that because they saw, okay, so people like the tools and they're creating campaigns that are probably better than what we did with the game. So let's include that in the sequel as well.
Oh, before I forget, I did want to bring up this little anecdote. The custom tools in this game, like we kind of mentioned power, they are super powerful. I learned how to code, essentially, with sort of the basic of learning how to use the tools in this game. They're ridiculous. You can do some wild things, and it's nuts. Kazuma, anything you wanted to add before we move on to ranking?
I guess, want to talk about the influence of the game, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
And like where it stands as like an RPG in relation to, I guess, like other influential games. Just because I feel like it's important to, I guess, I had this discussion. I think you mentioned, one of you mentioned that you had listened to me talk on the Best Games Ever podcast. Maybe, I'm not sure. but basically it's a show similar to this, and I had nominated Resident Evil 4 for like being one of the best games ever. And while it's not personally one of my favorite games, and I don't think it's aged very well, I think it deserved to be on that list because of what it had done for the industry. And while Neverwinter Nights isn't necessarily a good game anymore by any regard, narratively, graphically, gameplay-wise, I still think it's important to, I guess, I mean, in comparison to what we have now, because the industry has evolved, narratives have gotten better, graphics have, of course, gotten better as well, execution has changed, combat system has gotten better. Sure, I prefer the, I do really like the combat in Neverwinter Nights, because it's something that I'm used to, because it's a game I played when I was really young. But I feel like, again, it's important to consider what this has done for the industry and how it sort of shaped RPGs onward, especially with something like the Dragon Age series that I don't necessarily like. But I feel, again, like these are really big milestones for Western 3D RPGs, and I feel like it's important to kind of acknowledge that with this game, or
well,
to at least consider it when going into it.
Well, thankfully, Legacy is something we actually consider very heavily regarding the list.
Speaking of the list, just for comparison, at number 132, we have Planescape Torment. So I think that Planescape Torment is overall a better game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I will not disagree with that.
Yeah, but it's also a game that builds upon the other Infinity Engine games. So it doesn't really push things forward as much as this game here did, which was also an early adapter of 3.0, as opposed to Planescape Torment being a fairly late second edition game. So, yeah, I would kind of be okay to rank it both above and below this for those
reasons. I think I'm okay with it going below, but not too far below. That's actually probably one of the better places to start.
I, on the other hand, am looking at 200 because I think that the legacy of this game is basically about all it has really going for it.
I don't think I see it there. What do you think, Tex?
I'm just looking at a couple of other games in between here.
Because the reason I say 200, it's like Metal Gear Solid Ghost Babel. Well, as far as I'm aware, this doesn't have a game-breaking bug that prevents you from finishing the game.
That is generally true.
But I'm going to throw out while Tax is thinking. We have Final Fantasy Tactics, and
it has to go under Tactics. I'm sorry, I'll fight for that. It has to go under Tactics.
Yeah. Also, since we're talking about influence, on 192 we have Dune 2.
Yeah, but
he single-handedly created a genre as we know today. If you go by influence, it has to go below that.
Well, that's true, but that's why I'm going to put a case for the gameplay. And I play this game a lot because it's fun. I like the combat in this game. Like Kazuma said, I am totally with him on that. So,
I will concede that the best parts of the game are when you're just dungeon crawling, which is why Underdark is a thing you should frankly just skip to, because they don't BS around with trying to have a plot. It's just go here and dungeon crawl, and that's where the game is at its best.
Okay. Cosmo, what do you think? How do you feel about Diablo 2?
I think Diablo 2 is basically probably the most popular or fan favorite of these looting, like, third-person isometric games. Its influence is just everywhere. Like, I even say it's as far as, like, looter shooters. This is where, like, that looting, the concept came from, right?
But here's the fun part about this podcast. The fans aren't here. It's just the four of us.
Yeah, I'm just considering, like,
I know.
Again, like, its influence and everything. And I'm also seeing, like, other games, again, like, where was it? Like the Yakuza series, which basically spawned like an entire like style of game as well. You see, like BioShock and whatnot. And as influential as Neverwinter Nights is, I feel like these games like these games as a whole have withstood the test of time better and had their own franchises, whereas Neverwinter Nights got cut short because I don't think Neverwinter Nights 2 did as well.
No.
Yeah. So Neverwinter Nights was kind of like a one-hit wonder in that regard, despite its influence being pretty pervasive through the Western RPG genre.
Well, don't feel too bad about metrics and consistency on where things go on the list, because it's sort of a gut feeling when it all comes down to it. So you go ahead and you pick a spot, and we'll kind of work. Everyone's kind of thinking mid hundreds, low hundreds. Where are you thinking?
Upper 200s.
Upper 200s. Do you have like a spot you kind of think it goes where you're like, well, it's worse than this game, but better than this game?
I'm going to say it should go under Mega Man Legends.
Mega Man Legends, 195.
Yeah, that puts it under Dune 2, so I'm happy with that.
I can agree with that.
You know?
What about Bushido Blade? Because Bushido Blade is also a game that's somewhat ambitious. Got a sequel that nobody played all that much, and then kind of frizzled away.
You see, that's half the reason why I suggest putting it at 200, because it would make Xerxes happy.
You know what? I'm actually okay with that. 200. Because I think Jagged Alliance 2 is really better. Captain Blood is more interesting. Yeah.
But then I think it would actually be good. It's better or worse than Ghost Babel, and that's a tough one.
It doesn't have a game-ending bug that randomly happens.
So that's two votes for above Ghost Babel. I'm going to say no. What do you think, Kazuma? You're the tiebreaker right now.
Okay, so I'll be honest. I've never even heard of Jagged Alliance 2 or Captain Blood. So that tells me that I haven't heard of these games, so not as critically acclaimed. So it's kind of like,
I mean, I'm with you if you want to push it up a little higher, but I don't know how much we're going to get there. Because I'm not 100% myself on putting it below Bushido Blade, but...
I'll prepare my coin of science. Just in case.
Again, I feel like under Mega Man Legends is a pretty solid spot, but...
Okay, tell you what, then we'll do the coin flip. Under Mega Man Legends or under Bushido Blade? You're the guest, so you get to pick heads or tails.
Tails.
Alright.
It's going to be heads.
I know that feeling. I always call heads. Yeah. I always call tails, so, it never is. Except the one time I needed it to be.
Yeah, so this may seem random, but it's a scientific coin.
Yeah, it's scientific.
So for the record, I'm going to let this hit the floor and hope it doesn't roll under my bed.
All right, so tails under Mega Man Legends, heads under Bushido Blade.
All right, here we go. Hey.
It rolled.
It rolled. I stopped it with my side.
As we all know, Forgotten Realms, that means it gets to decide.
It's tails.
All right, and there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Neverwinter Nights, under Mega Man Legends, above Poppo and Yo, at the new 196. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Word and Tax, for being here. And a special thank you again to Kazuma for joining with us. And I hope you felt Neverwinter Nights at least got some of the due talk that you wanted it to.
Oh, absolutely. It was great being here. Thank you so much for inviting me and having me on.
Of course, and you said once again that you're a writer over at rpgsite.net, right?
Yes, rpgsite.net.
Okay, good, because I took that shot and I'm like, wait, I forgot what the domain was.
It's .net.
.net. So yes, check you out there. It's a great site. I love it, and I'm going to have to read more of your articles. Thank you all for being there. Good night, everyone.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.